Mark Collier for Thomas Matters Radio. Back in the podcast studio today. You had a listen yet to The Bachelor and Bourbon? That's our new podcast featuring Jessica Duke and her husband Kevin. And they are big time Bachelor fanatics. So they go over each episode and kind of give you a little bit of insight as to how they saw it. It's been doing really, really well. Downloaded a couple hundred times already today, and it just went live. So give it a listen. It's on our For Thomas Matters podcast channel. You don't need to download anything differently. Just right on your podcast app. It's that little purple icon on iTunes or your iPhone device, also available via Google Play. Anywhere you listen to your podcast, you can get For Thomas Matters. Just simply search For Thomas Matters, and it will be right there in your news feed. Of course, For Thomas Matters is sponsored. For Thomas Matters Radio is sponsored by Omega Processing Solutions. They are a big-time advocate of us and local business. And if you are a local business, you need to be talking to them, because they make your bottom line easier to accept payments. They have something called Swipe Simple. It's mobile payments made better. It's Omega Processing's secure payment solution that combines the flexibility of mobile with the power and insights of a POS terminal. The EMV reader, card reader, and iOS Android payment app allows you to make the sale whenever and wherever you need. There's just three simple steps. Download the app, plug it in, and then customize and manage your business to make your bottom line bigger. So are you ready to securely accept payments on the go? If this is you, you need to contact Omega Processing Solutions today. That's 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724, or you can read more about them at omegap.com. So today on the show, we are going to talk to at least one elected representative, maybe two. I'd like to get one on from both sides of the aisle, the Republicans and the Democrats. For sure, we have Senator Will Schroeder booked. Will has been on For Thomas Matters Radio a number of times. He's the state Senate District 24, which represents Campbell, Pendleton, and Bracken counties. Will was elected in 2014. So he is now, can we call him a veteran? I don't know. We'll ask him that. The Republicans are kind of winning the day right now, so to speak. And that is because of the Republican wave that occurred in not only in Kentucky, but really across the nation. There's an endless variety of instruments that can be used in politics to wield power or governance. But the tool that really kind of enshrined a historic shift of power in Kentucky this week was just a Phillips head screwdriver. So minutes after lawmakers convened the General Assembly in 2017, which started earlier this month, a Capitol caretaker walked to the front of the House chamber with a screwdriver in hand. After a minute's worth of twisting screws into the mahogany of the speaker's rostrum, he stepped away and the gaze of a standing room only chamber fell upon his handiwork. There, for the first time in 96 years, the name on the bronze nameplate affixed to the chamber's focal point was a Republican's. Let me read that again. For the first time in 96 years, the name on the bronze nameplate affixed to the chamber's focal point was a Republican's. The moment highlighted that Kentucky has, for the first time, Republican control of both legislative chambers as well as the governor's office. This ascendancy of Republican Representative Jeff Hoover to the speaker's chair and the arrival of new Republican 64-member supermajority in the House this week certainly marked the turning page of Kentucky politics. But there were some moments of celebration and pageantry. The session's first week wasn't about all of fanfare or settling in or even getting accustomed to the new dynamics in Frankfurt. It was largely about action. Nobody can stop the Republicans right now, again, because they have a supermajority in all three legislative bodies. Over the course of the first 5 days, members of the Kentucky House and Senate pushed seven significant bills through the legislative process and delivered them to Governor Matt Bevin's office. And because emergency clauses were added to each of the bills, each one of them are right now in effect as we talk on January 11th. So what do the newest laws in the Commonwealth do? That's what we're going to talk to Senator Will Schroeder about. But they affect pregnant women, unborn children, economic development officials and job recruiters, members of labor unions, university students, construction workers, manufacturers, open government advocates, and citizens in every corner of the state. So it's been a good couple of weeks for Republicans. I'd like to have on a representative from the other side of the aisle to get his take on what he believes is happening, because as we know, politics are an ever-shifting paradigm. It is a pendulum that swings back and forth, and right now it is swung in a very strong and heavy-handed way to the right side of the aisle. So we're going to try to make sense of this, of the people that put their names to these bills, talk about these bills, and up first is Senator Will Schroeder. So in studio now is Will Schroeder. Will is the District 24 representative representing Campbell, Pendleton, and Bracken counties. Is that all, Will?
Yep, that's it. All three of those.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show today. I know you're busy. So we got through the first legislative session earlier this month, finished up on the 7th. You guys are going to reconvene on February 7th and then wrap everything up. Is that March 30th? Is that about right?
About right, yeah.
Okay. So fast and furious first session. Let's go over some of the bills that were high priority that did get passed. You have an overwhelming majority now as part of the Kentucky Republicans. But I wanted to start with one that you were the sponsor of last year, and that's prevailing wage. That's House Bill 3. That was sponsored by Speaker Hoover and Representative Adam Koenig, who is in Northern Kentucky, part of the Northern Kentucky Legislative Caucus. Going back real quick, I just want to insert this. You're now the chair of that caucus.
I am. Thank you. Yeah.
That's a big deal for you and for us, too, as your constituents. We'll go back to that, but House Bill 3 would repeal the state's prevailing wage law, and that dictates the hourly base wage for construction workers hired for certain public works projects, like school construction, stuff like that. So that passed the Senate 25-12, went through, or passed the House, passed the Senate, and it's already been signed.
It has been, yeah.
So let's talk about that bill right now, what that means for Kentucky to get that passed.
Well, I'm excited. You know, I'm excited for the school districts especially. So the past two sessions since I've been down there, I took on a prevailing wage repeal bill, and the bills I had, it only dealt with school districts. And the kind of political strategy behind that was we were hoping we could get enough House members to cross over, Democratic House members to cross over and support the bill, because there had been a precedent for that in the past with schools being having that exemption. But this time, as you alluded to, you know, we have super majorities in both houses, so we didn't even have to limit it to school construction. We went all the way. Any government jobs over $250,000 had been subject to the prevailing wage, and often referred to it as artificial wage because the government is the one setting that wage. So what this will do is it repeals that. It goes back to the free market philosophy. It's going to save cities and counties a tremendous amount of money.
And specifically in Fort Thomas, so we have right now the construction of Ruth Moyer Elementary, which you're very, very familiar with on Highland Avenue. That is subject to prevailing wage. Is that correct?
It is, yeah. And that will stay subject to that because the project's already been led. It's already been started, and I'm sure contracts have already, you know.
So apples to apples, now that this is signed into law, down the road, we have coming up the pike, hopefully, Next budgetary session is in 2018. Is that right?
Yep.
So let's cross our fingers here in Fort Thomas that Johnson Elementary is, let's get some money to get some construction. And we won't go too far into that because I know we're still about a year away from that.
I'm working on it.
So let's say that that happens. So apples to apples, Ruth Moyer Elementary construction with prevailing wage, Johnson Elementary without prevailing wage. Where are the two differences? Do you have any feedback on that?
So, you know, I don't know the overall projections of the cost, but so where the prevailing wage really added was in the labor, and 30% of labor costs went up, typically added 10% to a construction project. We heard from a mayor who testified, Mayor Sadieville. He testified about a sewer project he had, and that 10% on that sewer project ended up being $545,000, I think. And his point was, you know, I can run the city for 3 years. That's our, you know, our budget for 3 years. So significant savings. That's a city example. Of course, it's, you know, if we do Johnson, it will save tremendously. And to kind of give you my overall philosophy, I was contacted by some people, not as many in Campbell County, but, you know, in Bracken and Pendleton as well. And, asking about, well, our work, you know, our wages are going to go down and everything.
Talking about union workers.
Correct. And for me, the overall, you know, deciding factor was every study that we looked at. Of course, there are some biased studies, but the LRC, the Legislative Research Commission, who works for us, nonpartisan, they did a study. And while the wages go up, while the overall cost goes up, there were no examples, they cannot point to the quality actually being different. So you're paying more, but the quality is the same. And, you know, that's taxpayer money and it's taxpayer dollars coming out of your pocket. So just couldn't justify doing that.
Yeah. And I actually saw a couple of different things. So there was a video on, I think Harold Leader might have had it, where Matt Bevin walks into a bevy of, you know, angry union workers. And, you know, to his credit, he stood there and answered their questions. But yeah, those are the types of things that they're saying that, you know, in every prevailing wage state, right, wages have gone down for union workers. And understandably, like, that's probably why they don't want it. But you're saying that, you know, even though that was something that you were weighing, that seems to me like the end of the day, your main reason is that you wanted free market principles to be a part of this, and if quality was going to stay level, you were okay with that.
Right. So, I mean, if I'm going to ask people to pay, you know, in my case, we're in the government, so the government is going to ask taxpayers to pay more money for a product. They have to have a justification for that. And if the quality was not going to change, it's really hard to justify telling taxpayers, well, hey, you're going to have to pay more. I mean, the other exciting thing about the repeal, although some of the wages are going to go down, there's going to be more opportunities for more projects. Cities are going to have more money. Schools are going to have more money to spend and consider new projects.
Let's go to a Senate bill, and this one was sponsored by your Northern Kentucky Legislative Caucus and dare I say, friend and good guy, Chris McDaniel of Taylor Mill. That one passed overwhelmingly throughout the state and the House, and that would require the retirement benefits of current and former General Assembly members to be made public. Disclosure would include the member's name, estimated or actual monthly allowance, and that passed 95-1. We don't need to talk about that a whole lot because that seemed to have bipartisan support across the board.
Yeah, it did. You know, I think it's just a great example of, you know, we talk about transparency, but we have to be willing to lead in that front. And Chris had a great bill. Just let the public see, you know, as an elected official, as your state senator, how much are my projected benefits. You know, we've talked before. I know a lot of people wish you could just completely opt out. One of the first decisions I made when I went down there, I opted out of the legislative pension, but I couldn't opt out of Kentucky's pension completely. So you're still in the Kentucky retirement system. But, you know, I believe constituents definitely have that right to know.
So do you think it'll actually do anything other than just providing transparency?
Pretty much it. That's pretty much it. But it's good. I mean, if we're looking at bills down the road, other transparency bills for more people, I think it's good that we set that example.
Another one that kind of goes along the lines of union work with House Bill 3 that we talked about was House Bill 1. And that was sponsored by, again, Speaker Hoover. And then Jim, how do you say his last name?
DeCesare,
of Bowling Green. That would make Kentucky's the 27th state right to work state, which prohibits mandatory membership in or payment of dues to labor unions. So another, I guess I'm just going to call it an anti-labor movement. Indiana has passed it around us. Tennessee has passed it around us. That vote was again the same as House Bill 20 or House Bill 3, 25-12. Your reason for your vote there?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's so much anti-labor, although they would definitely say that. Is for me, it's more, it's a pro-worker, pro-business growth opportunity. What we heard from site selection, from people that deal with companies looking at different states, that this was one of the top factors that they would say is Kentucky a right-to-work state. And if Kentucky's not a right-to-work state as it hadn't been, a lot of times that just right off the bat, they weren't willing to consider Kentucky. So we really hadn't seen a lot of big companies since Toyota's movement to Georgetown. I mean, that was, you know, forever ago. And this is hopefully will bring a lot more companies here. As you had said, we're the 27th right-to-work state. And a lot of the states, or at least some of the states that have gone right-to-work, and I should add that Michigan's even a right-to-work state.
And West Virginia.
Yeah, West Virginia. But some of those states have actually seen their union membership go up. What's important is when there's more, when the economy's doing well, unions are going to do well. So if we can help the economy do well in Kentucky, that will benefit unions as well.
Along those lines, Senate Bill 6, that would require public or private employees to request membership in a labor union bill. Yeah. Anything else to add there?
That was called paycheck protection. Basically what happened was when you went in there and you signed the agreement, your employment contract, wages for that could be used for political expenditures were automatically coming out of your paycheck. You had to opt out. And you only had a limited time to do so. What this bill did, it was sponsored by Senate President Robert Stivers, and what it did is you have to opt in. They have to come to you and they say, Mark, you know, you're part of the team. We want this percentage of your paycheck to go to the union dues that are going to be involved with political activity. And you have to agree to that. There was a concession we made. You know, we heard back from the fire department, different FOP organizations, and there had been a yearly requirement that they would have to go back to their members yearly, and we realized that a lot of these smaller cities or smaller fire departments and FOPs, that's a burden on them. So really now it's just a one-time thing, but in the beginning you still have to opt into it.
I want to go to two, you know, some would term it as controversial, some would not, but two abortion or anti-abortion bills that were passed had previously, you know, always kind of died in the House. That would be Senate Bill 5, which was sponsored by Brandon Smith and Whitney Westerfield. Let's talk about that one first. That would prohibit abortions in Kentucky at or after 20 weeks of pregnancy. The bill would not apply in cases where an abortion is required to save the life or prevent serious risk of permanent bodily harm to the mother. That received passage in the House by a vote of 79-15. Then on top of that, we have House Bill 2, which was sponsored by Jeff Hoover and who was the co-sponsor on that? That was in Northern Kentucky, Adia.
Yeah, the Wishner Act.
Yeah, Wishner, which would require a woman seeking an abortion to have an OB ultrasound of her baby explained to her by a healthcare provider before she could get required consent for an abortion. And then on top of that, women could decline to see the ultrasound image or hear the fetal heartbeat if they choose. Both of those passed. The House Bill 2 passed 32-5. Joe Fisher, who is the House representative for Fort Thomas, was he the committee chair that it passed out originally?
I'm not sure about that. I do know that Senate Bill 5, the 20-week, he helped handle once that passed out of the Senate and got to the House.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Joe was kind of the main guy to kind of carry that bill through. I think they're both, two good bills for the pro-life community. I think a lot of people were happy, especially this area. You know, we have a pretty conservative area. And, 20 weeks, you're talking about 5 months. I mean, to me, that's a pretty significant long time. There. And then the other one, it's making sure women are informed about the decision they're about to undergo.
So a couple of headlines that have been making a way through the state. These are Herald Leader headlines. I'm going to read them both. First, ACLU is suing Kentucky over a law requiring the ultrasound before abortion. That is one. The other is that Andy Beshear, Attorney General, says he's only going to defend one of Kentucky's two new anti-abortion laws. So let's start there. Governor Bevin has said that, it's not up to Andy Beshear to, decide which laws he's going to enforce. Where do you come down on that?
Yeah, first of all, going back to the headline, the ACLU, I mean, that wasn't a shock. We knew that was coming. Just because someone files a lawsuit doesn't mean that they're in the right. There was actually a fund established because people predicted that, and it was people could make donations and stuff to, instead of using taxpayer dollars, to support these lawsuits. Defend these lawsuits, rather. And it was kind of funny how people jumped on that and said, oh, you already know it's unconstitutional. No, it's that we already knew ACLU was going to sue no matter what. As far as Andy Beshear's decision, I was really surprised, and I was surprised that he picked the 20-week one especially because, as we've advanced in technology and medical science, babies are being able to live long sooner, I guess, or more prematurely than ever before. And the other big factor is, look, we're going to have a new Supreme Court. Sure, we're replacing Scalia, who was a conservative voter, but I think that raises a lot of questions and could change things.
So either way, it's some controversy, but those are the six bills. The seventh bill that was signed and passed was Senate Bill 12, which was sponsored by the Senate President Stivers. That would abolish current Board of Trustees members for the University of Louisville to clarify the number of members allowed on the new board along with qualifications for membership. That could call into question the accreditation of the university. So how did you vote on that?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked about this because I've actually, out of all these bills, I've received a fair amount of attention to Senate Bill 12, and you might not expect that. We obviously NKU's here in Campbell County, but we have to remember how many of all the students here end up going to Louisville. And so we have a lot of concerned students. We have a lot of concerned parents. There's a lot of history, and I'll get into that. I actually voted no on this bill, and it wasn't because of the substance of the bill. It's because, I made a promise to myself, and I feel like I made a promise to my constituents when I go down there that I'm really going to dive in, read everything, and get feedback. And the way, and it's, no criticism of President Stivers at all because he has a good rationale as an emergency situation for pushing this bill so soon. But I just felt like I couldn't, really vote for something that I hadn't really reached out and gotten feedback. But the history behind it was when Governor Beshear was in office, he made appointments to the Louisville board. And that board's membership has statutory requirements in the makeup. There's some of the things that are required are race requirements, ratios, and political party ratios. And those weren't being followed. And actually, Attorney General Jack Conway at the time when he was running for governor had been getting pressure to sue the governor because he wasn't following the statute with the board makeup. So then you also had, on top of that, you had a board that many would consider highly dysfunctional. It wasn't able to pass a budget. It couldn't determine if they wanted to raise students' tuition rates or not. So you had all kinds of problems. So Governor Bevin came in. He, under his authority, made new appointments, changed the board up a little bit. Well, Andy Beshear sued, saying he didn't have the power to do that. The lower court in the Franklin Circuit Court put a stay on the actions, meaning Neither of the board, they didn't really say you're right, you're wrong. They put a hold on everything. Well, the problem with the hold on everything and the reason that this the timing was such an emergency is, as you know, Louisville's without a president right now. They're actually across the river. Cincinnati kind of stole the president. You know, they decided they wanted the president. So Louisville is without a president. They're without a budget. They don't know which board's going to use. I mean, all kind of serious ramifications, as you can imagine. So President Stivers wanted to make sure we get this taken care of. Meanwhile, the accrediting agency, they put Louisville on probation for the political influence because there's so much uncertainty of the board. And I want to point out, Mark, that, you know, there's a big difference. Probation, my understanding, you know, we're not there. You're going to lose accreditation. We're not there yet. It's we're a long ways off from that, but they're putting you on probation, saying, hey, you have some things to work on. You have some things to straighten out. And that's what Senate Bill 12 is trying to do.
I think Governor Bevin, I saw him say at one point that this is absolutely false. They're not going to lose accreditation. And he had mistakenly said that it's never happened before. It has happened before. But I looked at the list of schools that have lost accreditation, and no really, you know, slight to them, but they're not the University of Louisville. These are schools that are very, very small, that have lost funding altogether, and have done grossly worse things that, you know, Louisville is on probation for.
You know, I'm confident that we're going to do everything within our power in the General Assembly to make sure we don't even get close to them reaching that point.
So I know you got to run. You're heading up to Highlands right now. Are you judging a We the People?
I am. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and we got a dynasty there, bigger than our football team. I think we win the state title there every year. So we've got three weeks until from your last adjournment to when the gavel strikes again. What are you going to do in the next 3 weeks?
You know, this is one of the great things I like about the short session is we gavel in the first week, January, and then we break the rest of January, and it gives us time not only, you know, for somebody like me who really likes to read all the bills, reach out to constituents, make sure I get feedback. That's great. But then also what it allows me to do, I've been doing school visits. A lot of fourth graders, as you know, go down to Frankfurt. So it's awesome. I love visiting the grade school students. You know, it doesn't matter. The great thing about kids, it doesn't matter what party you're part of. I mean, it does. They don't know how I vote. You know, they don't care like how I voted on the last. They're just happy I'm there. They're like excited about the process, and that's just awesome to see the kids smiling and see the whole.
Are they engaged?
They are. Yeah. You know, they're excited. They're usually amped up about their trip to go down to Frankfurt, and so you know, I have just a little slideshow with them. Go explain the different floors of the Capitol building and the different branches, and it's just a blast. So that's another. That's like one of the fun parts of the job I get to do during the 3 weeks.
So we'll do another podcast. I know we're butting up here and you've got another appointment. I'd like to talk about a preview of what's going to happen for the final, component of the session. Maybe talk some of your priority bills. I know that you've certainly got some that haven't made their way to the governor's desk yet. So Senator Will Schroeder, how do people connect with you?
The best way is through email, through my LRC email. It's will.schroeder@lrc.ky.gov. It's Will with one L, Schroeder with one E. And or you can call the switchboard down there at 502-564-8100. Reach me that way.
And you'll get those little green pieces of paper.
Yeah.
Which you all love. All right, Senator Schroeder, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So that was your District 24 State Senator Will Schroeder talking about the first session of the General Assembly, which saw seven pretty significant bills passed and signed, and they are into action at this moment due to some emergency measures. The Kentucky GOP is flexing their muscles. There's no doubt about that. I wanted to get Representative Dennis Keene, who represents Newport, Bellevue, Dayton, to talk about the other side of the aisle. He is not available today, so what we're going to try to do is just break up the podcast and do one with him separately. So we want to try to get all of the different views from both sides. Obviously, the Republicans are having their way with it right now, but we want to make sure that we're representing everybody give him some time as well. Some other issues that I do want to talk with either Representative Keene or have Senator Schroeder back once again are charter schools. That's obviously a big deal, and something that's probably going to make its way to either the Senate or House floors. How will that affect our school system in Fort Thomas? Could be a big deal. So we'll talk about that. We'll preview the rest of the session with him later on and see what both representatives in our area have on their legislative agendas. So again, for Senator Will Schroeder, this is Mark Collier. But before we go, I want to give a little bit of love to one of our sponsors on Fort Thomas Matters Radio, and that is Jamie Anna Insurance Services. Jamie Anna is located at 1136 South Fort Thomas Avenue. You can reach her at 859-441-0310. Are you a small business owner? Are you looking for options on your insurance coverage for your small business? If so, you should call Jamie Anna Insurance Services. She represents Erie Insurance, which offers a wide variety of business insurance. She can customize a package to best fit your needs for your small business. So whether you own a salon or a restaurant, or if you're a wholesale distributor, Jamie has a plan that can fit your business with Erie Insurance. Jamie Anna Insurance Services has plans for your personal insurance too. She's truly a one-stop shop insurance agent. Local agents with local ties. You can trust Jamie Anna Insurance Services to protect all you care about. Call Jamie Anna Insurance today at 859-441-0310 or online at jamieannainsuranceservices.com. That's J-A-M-I, Jamie Anna Insurance Services. Thanks so much. This is Mark Collier with Fort Thomas Matters Radio.